Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and we'll be with you tonight. Listen to this, folks, for the next 2 hours. This is a special show, and we're going to go into the main topic of the show in a moment. Just want to acknowledge the date here so that if you're listening to this later on in the archives, or if you haven't even looked at a calendar for the past week, it's still February the 13th on the West Coast, now February the 14th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone, and I suppose that warrants a very happy St. Valentine's Day, or a happy Valentine's Day. This is the day where we express our love for other people, and it's highly, highly synchronistic with tonight's topic. And I'm going to go right into that before I bring on tonight's guests. And I say guests because we have three people with us tonight who are going to share in this glorious report that I'm about to give the listening audience. I want to start out by acknowledging all of the people around the world that listen to this show. Many, many are coming to the show on a regular basis, nightly. And I'm getting just incredible reports from people that there are many, many, many more people listening to the show than actually we are documenting. And that we know can occur. It happens on Google Video when you're watching a film, and you see it go into the millions, and all of a sudden the number drops down to zero. That's done because there are certain people that don't want you to know that that's a popular video and that many people have seen it. That aside, I can sense in the spirit how many people are listening to the show, and although the numbers are quite incredible, what I'm about to describe is even more incredible than that. If you recall, on February 11th, which is this past Wednesday, I had found out a few hours, about 3 hours before the show, that my father had a medical problem, a medical issue. In fact, I'm free to tell you that it was a massive stroke. It was the third one he had in the past 3 years, and this was a bad one. We ended up taking him to a hospital that I have to say is absolutely a holy place on this earth. It is sacred, and it's not the norm for your average hospital. People aren't coming down with new diseases while they're there. They're getting healed. In fact, I'm going to share something that's going to blow some people's mind, and the possibility of miracles taking place are going to rejoice in what I'm going to tell you. Those of you who are prayer warriors, and my hat is off to all my listening audience who acknowledged my request for something as simple as a prayer for my father and a prayer for my family. As you know, I said on Wednesday, I seldom ask my listening audience to do much of anything other than to have faith and to not believe what I talk about, but to know it, come to know it, to take responsibility, to become aware, to develop some insight, to communicate and deliberate with one another, to face our problems, to step out of denial, to step out of the box, to step out of the matrix. These are things that you do for you, not for me. I encourage you to do those things because in the spirit, that's all I know how to do, that I know, because I know it leads you to the truth. It's led me to the truth many times. Tonight's guests have been led to the truth the same way. And the story I'm going to tell you has not just a happy ending, but it has an aspect, an element within it that shows us in a very simple manner what we can do to change this whole world overnight. We can do it. And I have the many listeners around the world those of you who prayed for my father, those of you who prayed for my family, and maybe even for me, because quite a few people acknowledged that they were keeping me in their thoughts, which I'm ever grateful for. I have no words to describe how grateful I am for your prayers. Now, if you know anyone who's ever suffered a massive stroke, it's very debilitating. If one comes out of one like this at all in any means or any manner, they usually are determined to be a vegetable, and they will not function. They can keep them alive on life support, and sometimes this occurs for many years, but the person does not have the hope or a bright future as far as regaining any modicum of physical mobility or even the ability to express consciousness. Usually they lose weight. They have to be fed intravenously. And there comes a point where the body just shuts down and the mind shuts down. And usually that's in the beginning. That's what happens with the stroke. The person may be aware spiritually of what's going on, but is unable because of the lack of the physical abilities to express themselves and to communicate. And so I asked my listening audience to pray, and I went after my show Wednesday night to the hospital, and I spent the night there with my father and my family. And everyone was very tired, and after they left, I had a talk with God. I invited God into the room. It's not something that I would do in the manner I did it with my family there, and it was a private matter between myself and God, and myself and my father. And so we had this three-way conversation going in spirit. My dad was in a coma. My dad was unresponsive to physical stimuli, and yet some part of me, because I had asked God when I first got the news, which was 3 hours before my Wednesday night show, God, is my father going to make it through this? And the answer was an implicit yes. And so my father lay there in the bed with tubes sticking out of every part of his body and monitors hooked up and IVs and nurses coming in and out and doctors coming in and out. And every time they came in the room, we got a little bit more encouragement to let go that my father was not going to make it, that they had seen this stroke as the most severe that they've ever seen, and that it was very unlikely that my father, even if he survived physically, would have any other kind of life other than a physical functioning via artificial means. So, that said, also I want to thank some other people, and I'm coming back to this in a brief moment here, and my guests know that I'm going to run on for a couple more minutes yet. I want to thank Karen, Bob and Bill, David, Crenshaw, Sheila, Sylvia, Zachariah, Casey, Cy, Pete, and let's not forget the general, and let's not forget Jill. I want to thank all you folks and the many thousands of people that you brought together to pray. I saw the presence of God in my father's room. I saw the presence of God when I prayed. I felt the presence of God, and I laid hands on my father, and my father felt the presence of God. And I knew that my father was healed, but we didn't see manifestation of that Wednesday night or Thursday morning now, and we didn't see that Thursday night as far as him showing any sign of consciousness. He was still in a coma. The doctors examined his eyes. They did the normal things that doctors do in those situations, and the nurses made my father comfortable. The people in this hospital, by the way, the name of the hospital is University Hospital in Cleveland. They made my father comfortable. They took care of him as if he was part of their family. I've never seen this in a hospital except when I was there 8 years ago, and I myself am a miracle coming back. And I've seen other miracles in that hospital, but I can tell you without a doubt that this place has been put on this planet by God himself, and he's ordained these people who are really angels in disguise. They wear masks, they wear gloves, they wear smocks, they wear scrubs, they wear all the things that doctors and nurses wear in a hospital. And even I remarked that the lady that mops the floors near the cafeteria is an angel. And I've had such friendships that I made with the cashiers in the cafeteria and people that I see in the hall. Even the families of the patients are coming up to each other, testifying to miracles that are occurring. And we had 5 miracles occur in the ward where my father is today. By the way, my father woke up this morning. He woke up and he was asked to show 2 fingers and he did that. And this is someone who had been determined that would be a vegetable if he survived. And he's got ways to go. So I'm still asking everyone to keep praying and to keep the faith in your own lives and in our country. Whatever our country is going to become is going to be determined by what we do. What we do and what we intend and our faith in God. I can tell you that God is very real. I can tell you with no doubt in my mind that God is very real. And I know other instances of people who have been healed, but they're calling my father in this hospital the miracle man. And the news is all throughout the whole hospital. Whether it's the people mopping the floors or the maintenance people, these people are beaming with light and love and peace, and they love their work. What's interesting is Thursday, when I was there in the hospital, I had the opportunity to talk to the nurse that was attending to my father, and I was the only family member in the room at that time, and I encouraged her, as long as she was in nursing, to stay in this hospital. Stay there and work there. Don't change, because she's an angel. God has sent her as an angel. I was prophesying to these people, and most of you would probably think I'm insane, because I do that on occasion, but it's usually in regard to my research, something I'm discerning. But I became a couple notches more powerful in my spiritual discernment and hearing God's voice. And I had it out with God. I made a comment to my father in talking to him while he's in a coma, that I wouldn't take his golf clubs that he tried to give me for the past 3 years until I was certain that he couldn't use them anymore. And he kicked me in the hand. And I moved to the side of the bed and held his hand, and I was offered the tools that he owns by my mother. And I said, when I'm certain that you can't use those tools, I will take them and I will love them and take care of them as you have all these years. And my father squeezed my hand. My father was hearing me speak. My father was still in a coma, yet he was acknowledging what I was saying. And I'm telling you, it's the most incredible experience that you can have. It goes beyond words. These words do not describe what I experienced. And I had this half an hour conversation with this nurse, and she left the room. And shortly afterwards, I came and did another show with Ken Adachi. And when I was finished with my show, I got a couple hours sleep, and I got a call in the morning that my father had come back. He had awakened. So it's been a glorious day, and I don't have a way to thank all the people throughout the world and beyond who have prayed for my father and for my family. And I can ask you to continue your prayers, because God expects us to show gratitude and to be thankful for his mercy. And I am certainly thankful for this radio show. I'm thankful for BBS Radio. I'm thankful for the listening audience. I'm thankful for my family. I'm thankful for all the people that never call in, never send an email, but who I can sense, because God has shown me this, that you do hear the message and that you do respond. And if it's only one person who prayed for my father, I have to congratulate you on having the faith in God and in Jesus Christ, because if it weren't for them, I wouldn't be here. None of us would be here. And this is something somehow we've forgotten. It's been driven from our consciousness. It's been stolen from us, or we've allowed someone to steal it. And yet, That's only an illusion, like all the other games being played down here that have imprisoned us and put us in shackles. We're locked in this belief system, and I'm telling you, folks, faith goes way, way beyond belief, and it goes way beyond knowledge. It enters in the area of the unknown. It's the unapproachable topic on this planet. And yet God will reveal the unknown to you by producing what should be normal, everyday occurrences. We call them miracles. And we're going to talk about that tonight. I've taken enough time, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart, and my family thanks you. And one day I'm going to have my father on this show to testify to what he saw, because I know he was in the same place I was 8 years ago before I came back and was given my third chance at life. With that, I want to welcome tonight's regular Friday night guest, my dear friend, scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, Mr. Jim Murray, as well as Dr. Kasim Khalil, who is himself an osteopath and a holistic healer and an author, a fantastic man, a fantastic human being, who's also an incredible researcher, and also Miss Judy Gray, who is a miracle worker herself and an author and a nutritionist. We're going to talk about this, and hopefully we are going to bring some peace and some love and some light to the whole planet tonight through this show. If you can feel the temperature rising here, it's already risen 20 degrees in my studio just by the power that's flowing through me. Folks, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Jim,
thank
are you,
you
Don.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Okay. Jim, you're our regular guest. I got to share this with you today, this news, and you were really left out of the loop, and I apologized to you then. I apologize for not keeping you abreast of what was going on. But what is your general impression of what you just heard me say, and couple that with what I described to you earlier today?
Well, first of all, Don, you don't have to apologize to me, because I know that you would never intentionally leave me out of a loop, so to speak. And after all, in a moment of such great personal concern as you have for your dad, the last thing I expect you to do is be thinking of me. But you were kind enough to call me as soon as you got the good news, and I felt very included in that, and I'm very grateful that you did that. And also, I'm very happy for you for a number of reasons. First of all, I've told you in private the story of how I lost my dad, and I'm very happy that you were spared that grief, and I wish you many, many, many more years of your dad's love and company. And most importantly, I'm sure the others will agree with me, I thank God for his intervention and for demonstrating to us how important the power of prayer is and how strongly and quickly it can be answered when it comes directly from the heart. And so my wish for you, Don, is a continued company and embrace of your dad for many, many years, and gratitude also for being such a shining example in our community on this radio show and in the group that you have formed, who is all cooperating together to bring this show to everybody tonight. So,
well, I
those
thank
are my
you.
Feelings.
I thank you. Miss Judy, usually yes. ladies before gentlemen, I'm merely acknowledging Jim as our regular on Friday night. You know, he's become like a co-host, and I would like your perspective, knowing how much you teach this. You teach this in a very simple way, and that lesson came through loud and clear for me over the past few days. I want to thank you and acknowledge you for that.
Well, thank you. But, you know, this is a blessed arrangement because, well, I don't know why, but we've come to a time in the existence on this earth that God has been left out of so much. And, you know, certain forces have taken over, but we have the power to bring his goodness and his love to totally overwhelm all the bad things that are on this planet right now. And, you know, as I told you, the one thing that he told me is love is the answer. And you experienced profound love surrounding you and your family through prayer. And, you know, prayer, it's a physical thing and it's a spiritual thing both, because, you know, there are beams of light that go into way beyond this earth when you're praying. And it's power and it's energy. And it's a transference of love. And, you know, so that's one reason why your father is still with us now, because there is such profound love around you and those that you love as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, I agree with you. Now, Seth just sent me a message that you sound a little bit quiet. I don't know if that's just because we have so many people on the line here. Maybe we can tell when Dr. K speaks. Dr. K, you were a tremendous source of comfort to me throughout this period, especially with your understanding, and I should include Miss Judy in this too, of alternative methods of healing, and
yes.
your faith and your acknowledgement of all religion, if it's based in truth, and if it leads one to God, and I'd like your input, you know, so far as we've gone right now.
Well, we do know one thing, and that is when the servant of God gives his heartfelt, you know, blood, where you just lay everything out in a pure and unselfish way, he always answers it somehow. It may not always be the way that a person wants, because our wants are limited in our limited intelligence. But as you know, the higher intelligence made us, so that's the intelligence. We're not the intelligence. The higher intelligence made even the people that don't believe in that intelligence. He made everything, you know. He made the positive pole and the negative pole. Everything. So, somehow, some way, when a person gives in a pure way, it's gonna be answered. And you saw that happen. So it's really that selflessness that produces the results. I think that accounts for what happened to your father.
Well, thank you. I immediately can associate this with other things that are going on the planet, and we can be all over the place tonight. I think the spirit's going to lead us where it will. So if I seem like I'm veering in another direction, understand that we can always bring this back to this central topic. I probably should have started out by saying that I'm this show tonight is in honor of my father. But I can't separate my father from all the other people that prayed for him. I can't separate him from God, nor can I separate those people from God. We're all one. That is one message coming through loud and clear, that it was the recognition, the simple childlike recognition, that we are all one and that our purpose was aligned totally. The doctors are there to heal. You know that yourself. You're a doctor.
Yeah.
That is your mission.
Well, when you give just without any attachment to yourself, and it's really just total giving, all kinds of things happen. And miracles are happening every fraction of a second when you give that way. You don't even know it. It's happening behind you, in front of you. And that's the thing I don't know if our world has understood. I see a selfish world, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it ties into what happened to your father. When you said, as you told me, that if it means if I give you my life, if that can help bring you, you know, your health back or something, that's a pretty selfless thing. You don't hear that every day. So somehow the world responded to that selflessness. If there's a lesson to learn tonight, because we've got a very different world. We have a woman that was, I think, murdered, and you do too, tonight, who was selfless. good God, one of our most selfless servants was killed in a fiery crash. And
yes.
I don't think it was an accident.
No.
So what we have in our world is that the selfless are assassinated, they're targeted, they're undermined, they're attacked. That's a totally opposite pole.
Yes, and you're speaking of Beverly Eckert, who had a relative that died on 9/11, and she was suing. She had a lawsuit, and she had spoken with Barack Obama, it's been reported, a week ago.
Yes, that's true, actually.
Yes, so we can assume that someone didn't want her to talk, and that she probably was committed to bringing out the truth about 9/11, which you and I are. Actually, we all are, for that matter.
Well, I was threatened... Just for the record, an individual, and I don't want to take up too much of the time here, but an individual on the radio started saying that Dr. K isn't even a real religious man, he's not a real believer, he's not a real Muslim, whatever. He was going on, and that I was attacking this individual, and that I was threatening him, and that eventually I might assassinate him, which was a code.
Yes.
You see? That was
yes.
a code. And that was by a person who was raised up to fight against our 911 truth that we were doing.
Yes.
So we know about the Beverly Eckerts, but I'll leave it at that until the discussion comes up later.
Yes. Well, that's well pointed out. Yes, I did make a statement when I was praying. I did state that I would willingly give my life in exchange that my father could remain here. And,
well,
and
that was and, responded to.
But I'm still here.
It doesn't have to be. Abraham, they say, said, okay, if you want me to kill him, although he's the only thing in this world I care about, I'll kill him. So, but he didn't kill him.
Yes.
So they were both still there, but the prayer was answered.
Well, there was a moment in that prayer where I reached down into the bottom, the depths of my being, and fear, as I have stated, has not been a part of myself for a long time. Once I understood totally what fear is and what faith is, I replaced the F word with another F word. I replaced fear with faith. And I began to have the veil lifted so that I could see all the illusions. I could see who's pulling the strings and how they're pulling it and why they're pulling it and when they're pulling it and on and on. So this message is also about facing fear and realizing that it's not real. What is real is what occurred in my family, and what occurred amongst those who were praying. I had the opportunity to share this with maybe 10 or 15 people, my close friends, and I have many, many others to contact to share this news with, because it's something to rejoice. It's something to be grateful for, because it's available to all of us with the problems that we have in the world, and there many of us have health problems. I suppose you could find something wrong with every single person on the planet, health-wise. There's some little issue that everyone has.
No doubt.
And so it can be overcome. But these stories are in the Bible, in the Holy Bible.
Well, Lazarus was in pretty bad shape, and they brought him back right now.
Yes, okay. This was such an event. And the doctors are dumbfounded. And they asked a question, is your family spiritual? And I said, what do you think? And the doctor became very quiet, but he had to ask that question. Because I and my family were given a prognosis. This is very grim. And we don't want you to get your hopes up, because these issues always result in the patient passing, sometimes very quickly, sometimes over a longer period of time. And we have the ability to sustain a person who has suffered a massive stroke for years even. We have that ability. But eventually that person dies. Well, I said to the doctor, we all die eventually in our bodies. But right now my father is here and my father is alive and God has shown me that my father is coming back. But God is also expecting me to go through the process of gratitude and supplication and not out of a desperation, but out of trust. Faith is true faith is a trust. It's an undeniable connection. And there's no middleman that's necessary. This is where the church errs, organized religion.
It's true.
They have to have a middleman, and they have to pass the plate, and it goes into somebody's pocket, and it goes into things. It buys jets, and it buys mansions, and it buys vacation homes, and it buys corruption and perversion. And every aspect of humanity and in their worst ways, these people are prime examples of that. Time and again, they're caught in these situations. None of us are perfect, but these guys are portraying themselves to be perfect and getting rich at the expense of others' quality of life, at the expense of their health, at the expense of normal thinking processes. People are brainwashed to the point where they just rely on this person moving their lips and uttering grunts and groans as they complain about not enough money coming in. And God, I've said this before and I'll say it again, I don't know how the Creator could create trillions of planets and trillions of stars and multiverses and time and no time and everything in between and have a problem such as a cash flow issue. How is it that that creator could not come up with money?
Yeah.
Okay, so the way we're presented religion and the way we're presented, what we're told is so untrue and so it's actually evil. It's a game, it's a trick being played upon us. And the simplicity of saying a prayer, the simplicity of acknowledging the creator in his, her awesomeness and spectacular presence, so brilliant that we can't even put our eyes on it. Our human eyes cannot withstand the light. And yet I felt this energy of God flow through my body into my father's body, and I felt my father become healed. And God told me beforehand that he would be healed. Yet I exercised my faith. It's also very ironic that Miss Judy spoke of energy and power, and that's Mr. Murray's expertise, isn't it, Jim?
Well, yes, but I generally don't lean into the spiritual. But I will say this though, Don, the mechanism that you have been explaining here, I am familiar with. And what's interesting about the whole thing were your remarks regarding the middleman. Because the concept of introducing a person as a go-between is what allows these various organizations to have power over the individual that's seeking a favor from God. I mean, this is the same mechanism that led to all the nonsense of indulgences and all the other rubbish that was taught years ago as being perfectly adequate and perfectly permissible. But the fact that you're introducing another individual between yourself and God also supplies, for all intents and purposes, an insulator or a baffle, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I recognized this when I was very, very young, and I said, there's no way that I will ever subscribe to that nonsense. And, of course, I took a lot of flack for it. But the fact of the matter is, what you really want to do is exactly what you did. Turn directly to God, with whom we are all joined anyway, and lifting of the mind and the heart in a direct act of prayer and faith, as you did. And I think, too, that there's one other element that I'm sure you had, which you didn't mention, and that is that when these miracles occur, there's always a knowing. And if somewhere deep inside, there's always a knowing that it's going to be given. It isn't a question of, gee, will you do it, or can you do it? It goes way beyond that. It becomes a knowing that it will be done.
Mm-hmm.
And
expectation.
That knowing, Don, represents the actual source of the power that becomes exchanged in that type of a request.
Yes,
I
agree. It's an expectation,
yes.
And it's an awareness, and it's an insight. You see, these are the things we've been talking about, too. Dr. K, you were going
to
say?
Well, just to concur with you and Mr. Murray, that trust is like 99.99% of faith. We talk about faith, we should be talking about trust. When the Creator tests people, he tests to see if you will honor the trust, if you will respond. The only way he can prove the game of life is to see how much the individual will trust in his offer. That's the sign of faith. So that's where it comes from. And, you know, I think a lot of people are thinking right now, have I bailed out too soon?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't bail out with your father, so look what happened. So,
well, and there was I would like Miss Judy to comment on this short statement I'm going to make. I realized that I was honoring my father, and honoring my father, my biological father, that I was honoring my spiritual father, who gave me the gift of life. In fact, both were responsible for me being here, you see. And I didn't see any difference between the two.
Well, there isn't, because we are all a part of God. He made us with his thoughts, and he made us exist. So there is no separation. The only separation is in the degree of each individual soul, how much your faith, your love, your trust, your dedication to the divine creator, you know, the more dedicated you are to that being, the higher you, the level you go. And the further you get away from him, you know, and he's always loving. He's always there. He's always forgiving. You have a chance, no matter what, to go back to him. But, you know, when you get to, I guess, such a the lowest level possible, they don't even know that they can elevate themselves at all. But...
And I wonder that, too.
Yeah. What was that?
Well, I wonder if it's like a lack of confidence in people that they feel they have to have the intermediate. And they don't do like what Miss Judy's always done, which is just go to God, go to the source. And she's never felt like she needed to have any communication with anybody but the big guy himself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And since I've known her, you know, I don't know what's happened to the humankind. But
God is love. You know, it's as simple as that. And, you know, there shouldn't be any fear or trepidation or doubt or anything, because, I mean, this is who you go to. He is the great one. He's the creator. He made this, you know. We are of his light. And
yes.
That's a treasure.
I agree with you, Miss Judy. That's a very important observation. And I think that the answer to the reason as to why people have lost the feeling of a direct connection, a lot of it has to do with the same training and brainwashing as is utilized to give them certain political bias and certain social bias. we are taught from a very very young age that, you know, if you really want to have God answer a prayer, that you should go through this intermediary character, whoever it may turn out to be in a given denomination. But the that whole concept stems from the realization that if you want to destroy a person's spiritual confidence, the first step is to remove the magic from his life. Mm. And by magic, I don't mean black magic. I mean the ability to be one with the spiritual powers that we are all given when we are born.
Yes.
And so that very mechanism, no matter how it's engendered, once it's in place, always puts you in a position of supplication and doubt. And for some reason, there are some people that it just doesn't work on. There are
yes.
people who intrinsically realize that this is garbage, and they turn directly to God and communicate with him soul to soul, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you did, Don, and that's why it worked.
Jesus said, "Man cannot serve two masters, for he will love one and hate the other." Now, Miss Judy said, "God is love. How can you hate God? If God is love, then the answer is love. That's the approach to godliness." And so, when we create wars in the name of God, are we really loving God in the process of murdering millions of people, or are we hating God? Are we hating our fellow brothers and sisters around the planet? You see the insanity behind war in that simple explanation.
Well, not only that, Don, but the ultimate truth is that those people who do hate God, and there are many, actually hate themselves.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. And they might hate themselves so much that they can't open up that joie de vivre you were talking about, Mr. Murray, about this sort of passion for life, which includes the passion of really having the faith to take the leap for the other dimension, the you know, the post-physical dimension. And
mm-hmm.
you know, that's, you must really hate yourself if you can't allow yourself to believe that there's something more to our existence, more profound than the material world that we see.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to pose a question to Miss Judy. Miss Judy, to be loving, does that require stupidity? Does that require ignorance? Does that require being dumb or moronic?
Well, some people think so, because they don't know what love is. And they think love is a sexual thing. They think it's, you know, or just, you know, that when you, if you're a loving person, that you're also somebody that you can really pull the wool over.
Like a
eyes.
Chump
yeah.
or something.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
They
or
understand.
Emotion. Yeah.
yeah.
Excessive
exactly.
emotion. Right?
Yeah. And it's so far beyond that. Love is such power that there are no words for it. Love could light every light bulb in this country. I mean, it's the power of it is so exponential that I can't even put words to it.
Yeah. Love is
our
the respect.
Creator,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Our Creator shines the sun on who? Everybody. I'm just quoting Jesus, really. The
yeah.
great Jesus. He drops the rain on everybody. He provides the green grass for everybody. He provides the food, ultimately, for everybody, except what humans have, you know, corrupted. But what it means is that even if we reject him, he's still giving us love. What if our wife seemed to be rejecting us one evening? You know, we'd be, or the opposite, you know, whatever.
So and you have to make your own dinner.
Yeah, I mean, so that's, if we copied his love, then you'd bring that peace that you're talking about, Don, on the earth.
Yes,
yeah.
It's always there.
Well, my love for God, I would like to I'd like the listening audience to know is my respect for my listening audience and my trust in my listening audience, because the only thing I could think of Wednesday night when I got this news was, you have to do a show. You have to ask people to pray. This is an opportunity to bring people together. And so my father's situation, which is really, it's a private matter, yet it presented an opportunity for us to go to God as a group and exercise our faith muscles and exercise our trust and our gratitude with the expectation that God would bestow his mercy upon my father and possibly us, because when we bless others, we become blessed. I have no words really. I'm talking tonight, and I have no words really to express, as Miss Judy said, how I really feel. These words, even to describe love, is as I've experienced it, and as these doctors and these nurses and these orderlies and these menial or the people that we look upon as menial, who made that hospital a beautiful place to be in. Every single person that I came into contact with was loving. Everyone. Without
Don,
one exception.
You remember when I told you that my channel said that my purpose was to lift up souls?
Yes.
And when such a coming together occurs, look at the lifting of souls. Through prayer alone, not only was your father allowed to continue his life, but look what happened, a coming together of souls. That is one of the most beautiful things that can possibly happen.
Yes, and this was...
And you know, Miss Judy, that I'm glad you brought that up, because there is a dynamic in that that has literally been eliminated for the most part from everyday life. At least it's being tried to be eliminated. And in the earlier eras, when people were more spiritually inclined, one of the prime directives that they all practiced was that they prayed in unison. They all lifted their minds and hearts together to the Creator for a particular end. And the power that represents is many, many times the number of souls involved. It's an exponential function. And I think that if we really and truly want to change the horror and corruption that's going on not only in our country but in the rest of the world, that's one way to do it. I mean, Don reached out and asked his listeners to participate in praying for his dad, and hopefully they all did so. But that mechanism of everybody requesting from God assistance with a particular problem all at the same time is something that no one can interfere with. No law can touch it. No dictator can squash it. And no walls and no other force can interfere with it. If we all decide that this planet is going to change, it will. And that is a really important factor.
Hear, hear. Absolutely.
This is why you are all on this show with me tonight. Because that wisdom that just came out of Jim's mouth is reflecting what Dr. K said and what Miss Judy has said, and if I'm included in that, I'm honored. I'm just a messenger. That's what my purpose is. I'm a messenger.
Yeah.
I was told today.
Well, I must say that you did tell me that. Oh God. I'd like to just do music. This is a little bit too heavy. That's the standard call of a messenger.
I've had that message, you know, and I feel like not Job when I say that. I feel like Balaam.
Well, there's a little bit of Jobism in it in some ways, isn't it? Because it is an awful big piece. But we're taking a bit of that right now because this is not a popular subject.
Mm-hmm.
You can see that the system has, what Miss Judy said about the gathering together of souls, this format right now is the only one that's discussed that in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Probably in the last decade, maybe longer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, we should be
every 5 minutes the discussion.
We've been taught about the power of attraction and all of that, which is, I mean, it's one of the laws, you know, the law of attraction. But you know, we've also been taught that materialistic things, materialism is, you know, that's what we all need, we want. You know, we have to surround ourselves with everything that we possibly can. And instead of a silver spoon, like I said, I was born with a sack of coal. But I always believed that if there was anything that I wanted or wanted to do or anything else, I could do it. I mean, I just absolutely believed it without going through all those courses or anything else. And my sisters always said, oh, she always could do anything, you know, everything. And I said, but you can too. And, you know, everybody can do whatever they set their hearts and minds to. Well, good or bad, hopefully good. Because that's where the reward lies, is with the goodness and the love and the caring. And, you know, that's the treasure that we should all seek. And, you know, what's really amazing is, whatever you put out there, it does come back to you. And so, you know, if you are absolutely focusing on killing and murder and hate and all of this, then you can't expect anything else. The Bible says, you know, he who lives by the sword dies by the sword. And so, I mean, that's a promise. And so I like something a whole lot better. I like to focus on my dear Lord God and the wonderful things that he does. And he's, you know, he blesses us in so many ways. We can't, you know, if we prayed every moment of our lives and thanked him, it wouldn't be enough. He is so blessed. He is so wonderful. He is so good. And he gives us so much.
A lot of times God is taken out of the equation, like he has to be expunged, like he's at the end of an eraser, you know. I got a question. Would anybody agree that we should get rid of all of our coal? How about wood, dried wood? Just, if you've got some stacked up by your house, you're just going to throw it away? And oil, gas. Only a fool would say we should just, you know, erase that from our minds, never use it. The ultimate power source beyond, I mean, we can't even define it. And we want to remove it from our lives. Or like Jim says, we want to dilute it. And Don said, by stacking a bunch of dominoes in between, you know, it's ridiculous. It's really beyond me. We come from God. We return to him. And if we erase him from our lives now, we're the weakest human being, and we're lower than a beetle pushing a dung pile. We have nothing. Why we would do that to ourselves?
We're lower than the dung being pushed by the beetle.
Yeah, of course, even.
I have a way with words. I'm sorry.
Yes, no, of course, even.
but what
even
you said,
that's
you know,
more true, because the beetle has more purpose than us if we take God out of our lives.
Yes.
Jim? We should take... I was going to interject that while all of that is absolutely true, we should realize that our enemies, the people who are destroying this world and who have only one objective of world dominance and control, they actually use this same principle directed toward darkness. And that is why they have come so far. We should actually learn from our enemies and use the same exact principles of directed thought, singularity of purpose, and absolute belief in striving for good. And then you really have something to fight with. But we should actually take the example from what they're doing. And instead of directing it toward darkness, we're directed toward light. because they're using the same principles.
Yes.
You know, this is so true. I can't remember his name. It's the Japanese man who works with the water, and he had them all go to this very corrupted, foul water, and they prayed in unison. There were, you know, hundreds of people who prayed over this water, and the water became pure, and it totally, you know, they took the pictures of it, and it had formed this special crystal. And it's quite a miraculous thing. I mean, there are so many things that happen every single day of our lives. I mean, look, you have the sun rising, the beautiful light. You have flowers. You have birds. You have all of these trees. You have, you know, all of these wonderful things. And everything is in unison, and everything has a plan and a purpose. And, you know, it's a symphony of wonderful, beautiful things that we can either appreciate and enjoy and utilize to the highest degree or destroy. And that is a choice. And this is the one thing that the human being has above any other creature, and that is choice. We can choose to do wonderful and good things, or we can choose to do the most foul, obscene, terrible things that can be dreamed of, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's true. Absolutely.
And
unfortunately,
you know,
there's a third choice too, and it's actually a negative choice in a sense, and that is the choice to do nothing. And that, so that for some reason is where a lot of people have wound up in the modern world. They're just going to play the wait and see game, and that is a very, very dangerous position to put yourself in. You cannot be on the fence. You're either in one yard or the other yard. And you really have to take a stand on a spiritual level if you really want to get in the game. Otherwise, you cannot complain about the outcome.
Oh, that's so true. Yeah.
Is there any difference between what you just described, Jim, and someone that suffered a massive stroke?
Well, I don't know about the person who suffered the stroke. I mean, it may have been brought upon that person for a reason.
Well,
I don't know that individual was necessarily positive, negative, or zero. But
no, I'm speaking
really
about the symptoms. The symptoms is what I'm speaking about, because that person is paralyzed. That person is in a coma. Is there any difference between having a massive stroke and being in that state, or being in denial?
Well, no, there isn't. But that was my whole point. What you do about the situation is what counts. And you took positive action, and that's why you had positive results. And people should really understand that.
Yes.
I think fear keeps people immobilized because, you know, I'm comfortable. I have a roof over my head. I have, you know, plenty to eat, a car to drive. I can go out and see movies, or, you know, I can do this, I can do that. And, you know, if I rock the boat, I might bring some real catastrophe upon myself, and so I'm just going to keep my mouth shut. And you know, you keep yours shut too, because we just want to maintain parity. But it won't happen, and that's the thing that people have to understand. You have to make that commitment, Jim, you know. You have to say yes, and you have to stand up and be counted, you know. And you do that with your love and your energy, and you keep pushing it through. You keep going forward all the time. And you keep putting that love out there day in and day out. Sometimes you get more sand kicked in your face than you do anything else, but you just keep right on going.
You know, we have this on-the-fence thing in America. I was just watching some television snippets with Miss Judy, and I said, I think I'm going to get a handgun and blow my brains out. I give up. Because what I was watching, the absolute apathy and the absolute mundanity, if you will, of our people, just feeling comfortable with the most silly things, that and life has a purpose, and not even paying any heed to it. So what Mr. Jim was saying, what Miss Judy is saying, there's scripture to back this up. The Quran, for instance, which gives this whole story that I think you've come to intuitively, Mr. Jim. And it says that there will be a time in the fires of hell, or the agony of your own you know, sort of realization, whatever it is, that the little guy will go to the kingpin and say, "Hey, kingpin, you got us into all this. We were just standing on the sidelines, not, you know, doing anything wrong, but we didn't do anything, you know, and here you drug us into this," and then the kingpin will say to him, "You got your own problems. You're responsible for what you did. Don't lean on me. You know, you have to face the music yourself." And, you know, we don't want to face the music of sirens when we see them. We all get a heart flutter. But I'm quite sure that most of us don't go to God on a minute-by-minute basis, and we don't even consider our responsibilities to Him. We just float through life. I wonder how many people listening now go to God and take action, and how many are just on the sidelines. What a challenge.
As that's so true. As I saw it, Dr. K and Jim and Miss Judy, is that there was no other place to go. And yet, I didn't have to go very far because I knew God was here. I knew God was within me. I've seen that. I've experienced that time and again, every day of my life, every moment. It's been an endless dream. And I came to realize through this experience that this phenomenon that's occurring, not just with me, but many people who are saying something's happening to time. It's as though time is disappearing. It's as though it.
Did you really experience that recently?
I've been experiencing.
Oh, I just told Miss Judy, I said, "Where's the time going? We're missing time. It's going. It's going quickly."
Oh,
well,
yes.
Ever since the suitcase bomb down in the that trench that caused the tidal wave or HAARP or whatever they used to do it, we've lost a minute and a half. Now that doesn't sound like much, but I think it adjusts time exponentially. And that it just seems like time is disappearing.
Well, you better get on your hands and knees with everybody and talk to God, because, you know, there'll be a time when you'll think that your life was nothing more than a blink of an eye.
Yes. We know that there are phenomena that occur when there's a nuclear event, and they're not just messing around with nuclear energy. They're messing around with all kinds of technology that manipulates time, that tears the time-space fabric of this reality that we call planet Earth. And it has to have an effect, an unseen effect, but still felt, because this past few weeks, you know, we've been dealing with a lot of really heavy issues, all of us on this show.
Well, I mean, Mr. Don, if they're going to take out a dear little teeny thing like Beverly Eckert, and you kill somebody like that, we don't have any time. And everybody does have to talk to God now, immediately. I mean, good God, she'd already had she was on a cell phone with her husband while he was trapped on the 105th floor. Couldn't go anywhere because Larry Silverstein and co. made sure that nobody could get up on that roof, and Eisenberg and Lowy and Rockefeller and Netanyahu and God knows whatever kind of thing. And she's on the phone with him. He says, "Honey, I love you. You know, I'm trapped here, you know, but I can't tell you how much I love you." And they're having some good old time discussion while the fires are coming closer to him. That's bad enough, but then there's a catastrophic boom, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's on the cell phone while he's being disintegrated into bones as he's dropping down in whatever particle beam or at nuclear, whatever they're doing in there, concussives. And now she's her whole mission has been to bring, like she said, the criminals to justice on her own. I didn't even know what she was doing. And then she gets kaboomed.
Well, it shows.
What does that tell you? You know, that tells you that if
if the power to be had to focus on that one individual to the point where they had to take her out, they have an enormous fear for what that person was doing.
Exactly.
And one thing you can always rely on, they're not going to take all of us out because we're the sheep that they need. And so you really can't be afraid of that. You have to turn it around and literally use it against them.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yes. And there are dichotomies, because we go back to my father's issue and this issue of prayer and this issue of faith and trust and coming together, the oneness. We have tremendous power in that. And that one part of us, we must recognize that the part of the oneness has been taken away from us in a physical sense. But I can tell you that I've witnessed the power of spirit, and that spirit of that woman will remain here.
Yes,
and,
in fact, it'll empower us. It's like one of Jim's materials that he's working on. Once that thing gets going, then and once that's revealed, then the real show begins. And Miss Eckert's helping us bring the real show to the game.
Remember last week I said that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego they held firmly together, and they threw them in the fiery furnace, but they didn't burn. They just were light, and nothing could touch them. And that's the way it is.
Yes, I Miss Eckert's now in every one of our homes, in every one of our hearts. She's in every one of our minds, and she's burning with power. It's very true, Don,
mm-hmm.
And very true what Jim said.
Yes, and they have a means through the media of separating to get their magical element into it too, their mysticism. 49 people in the plane were killed.
Yeah.
One on the ground. They add that separate. Not 50 people were killed. 49 on the plane. Oh, and by the way, one person on the ground was killed. That's the man that lived in the house that was struck. Now, 4-9 is 13. Their magic number. What network ran this nonstop? And if I were to turn on my television and turn to CNN right now, guarantee you.
CNN doing it, yeah.
Their story is there. And CNN
now,
is
Judy 13th. Brought up that this is Friday the 13th, too.
Oh, yes. We slapped the devil in the face, though, didn't we? It's actually a lucky day, if you want to use that term.
You know, in bringing this up, because we have Mr. Murray, our engineering man, you've got a very pretty powerful bombardier biplane, I guess, and you've got that going 3,000 feet. 2,000 feet, he's talking to the control tower, you know, flight number 3047, yeah, we're here, flight number 3047, everything clear. Everything is sort of status quo, and then, he's not there anymore. Well, somebody called police and sheriffs, our guy's not there anymore, just like that, right? All right, now, let me ask you something. Before that even happens, and anybody knows anything, AOL, especially AOL, says, it's ice buildup, everybody. Now, is AOL the NTSB? You know, are they the National Transportation and Safety? The NTSB guy says later on, he says, listen, we don't know for sure. Listen, don't be pounding me in so many words about ice. We haven't finished our investigation. We don't know. We can't say that yet. But AOL says it's ice. AOL says that the windshield is full of ice. Now, wouldn't the guy have said, listen, we're having some issues, there's ice buildup, wouldn't he have known if there was ice on his cockpit?
Well, it's very funny that you bring that up. I will tell you a story that actually happened to me personally many years ago when I was living in northern Michigan. I was involved in some legal commotion with a guy that was trying to steal one of my patents. And I had hired an attorney who was a very good friend of mine to assist me in this problem, and it necessitated that we fly from northern Michigan down to Detroit to file some papers. And on the way back, as you all know, it's very cold up there in the wintertime, and on the way back, there was a private plane, just the attorney was flying, and I was sitting next to him in the co-pilot seat. And as we descended from the higher altitude, all of a sudden, the window began to ice up. And you could see it happening. I mean, there's no way that a cognizant individual in that cockpit would not notice the ice, because it starts, it looks like spider webs at first, and then it just kind of cakes up and it gets more and more opaque, and you can see the layers establishing themselves, and pretty soon you can't see anything. And I turned to my companion, and I said, well, now what? And he said, well, he said, we got two choices. He said, we can either keep on descending, because we were flying on a beam at that time. He said, we can keep on descending, and if things go as I think they're going to go, then in the lower altitudes, the temperature will not be so low, and the ice will actually melt off the window before we hit the airfield. He said, but if that doesn't work, then we'll have to climb to a higher altitude and fly to an alternate location and repeat the process. And he said, usually it works.
So the moral of the story is the guy's going to know what's going on.
Absolutely. It's impossible.
He's not going to go A-OK, 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 and then, according to a local county official, bleep. The guy falls off a radar. The plane cannot be seen. It's no longer on radar. Doesn't exist on radar. All of a sudden, and then it strikes at a 90-degree angle perpendicular to the earth into a house.
And they said something about that it was shimmering and it was it rolled over, I think they said.
Well, local witnesses, they talked about thinking that there was some engine failure. That's interesting that it rolled. Did someone see it roll over?
No, but that's what they were saying on the it was doing all of these gyrations and all this kind of
thing. You see, that would have had to have been witnesses, because from the control tower's point of view, nothing was abnormal until it fell off of radar. So that's why I wanted to ask all of you. Falls off of radar. It doesn't fall at an angle like maybe there was so much ice on the wing and it sort of goes bad and it kind of crashes like a plane crash, sliding into its plane crash path. But no, it goes directly down like John F. Kennedy Jr.'s plane went.
Well, I don't know that this was eyewitness. I think this was probably the fabrication of the news people.
Oh, yes,
you know,
yes.
They do.
Oh, yes.
They always do that. I mean, I always say, listen carefully for the first maybe 30 minutes, because you'll hear pretty much truth. But then after that, the spin begins, and you'll never know what the truth is.
They don't want anybody to know that it fell off of radar and went straight down like a rock.
Yes, live on my show last night with Ken Adachi. Ken was talking, we were talking about the sound of silence technology that they used in the Iraq invasion, and Spirit prompted me to turn on my television set, turned it on, made sure the volume was down, and I was looking at a reflection in my studio window that showed blue sky. Now, I was told by someone today that they shone a spotlight on that, and it lit up the sky to where it looked like daylight.
How can that be?
No way. The sky was powder blue with a puffy white cloud, and you could see part of the plane in the foreground, and they showed this very strange shot. Why would you show the tail or the aileron or some part of the plane and with the blue sky, and as if somebody hit a switch on a video mixer, the sky turned black, the plane turned yellow, and then they panned over to orange, red, and yellow flames. With firemen standing around, someone had been told, I'm going to go out on a limb and say someone had been ordered not to spray any foam on this fire to put the fire out. There was no attempt to to put the house out, nor the plane, and the fire, which was consuming both, and whoever was inside was being fried to a crisp, and still the plane remained. Now, we saw on 9/11, we saw images, and we're told the story of three planes disappearing totally when they were on fire, and causing huge skyscrapers to collapse. This house didn't collapse. It did where the plane hit it, but the plane is still there. They retrieved the black boxes. Why don't we have this crumbling and this pulverization of wood? And you had pulverization of steel and concrete.
I must tell you that you're right on because what is important about this observation is that they made this obfuscation that no one could get anywhere near that crash because everything was too hot. Now, a couple of eyewitnesses said they got within 10 feet of the thing and were standing there. But we're told that the firemen can't do anything to put out the fires because the ground is too hot for them to step on. That's actually published now in the news channels.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so that would go along with some sort of high-level alteration. And those fires were burning quite briskly, weren't they, for quite some time. There are many photographs showing, and I guess the true eyewitnesses could tell us, but I guess there were some fake eyewitnesses, too, already, as we would expect.
Oh,
already
yes.
Already prearranged. Yeah. Is that right, not correct?
Yes, that's what came through. This individual by the name of Bernard Biddlecom, and it's not .com, it's Biddlecom. This individual actually has a connection that I can associate with the cable company just because of the two cities. It's not a coincidence that where he's from and where he is has the same cable service, and it spans three states, from Ohio to New York. And this cable company is owned by Time Warner, who also is part of AOL. These are CIA front companies, folks. That's what we're talking about here. Let's not mince words.
Was Biddlecom actually physically there, or was he in a video clip?
He's in the video clip, and he was talking. Now, I had the sound off, and I didn't listen to that audible part of the interview later on, but I did get a report that the crash occurred at 10:20 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is pitch black at night, especially with cloud cover like we've had. There was something very strange in the video, very, very strange. You don't get a spotlight lighting up the whole entire view of the sky.
No.
Powder blue, like Sunday
afternoon.
Wasn't
that strange the way they showed that Continental logo? Because when you look at the real footage from CTV in Canada, because Canada's close to Buffalo, so Canada sent its helicopter over. It's all charred, and that's different than the one you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The tail was charred. You couldn't see the logo of any degree.
Yeah. Now, I'm not saying this person couldn't be a witness. I didn't hear what he said, but I'm sure if I listened to the audio
But there's enough evidence, for example, the fact that the only passenger announced globally was our dear little Mrs. Eckert.
Mm-hmm.
Now, before NTSB does its investigation, before anybody has collected the wreckage, before the black boxes are reviewed, there are two things that the world Jewish media announced. They announced that it was ICE that did it. They announced that the only really known passenger is Mrs. Eckert.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have to ask the question, how could they, if this was a legitimate crash and not a plot, how could they have her name?
Yes, yes, that is a very pertinent issue, which is why that and this name of this so-called witness, I thought, who is this person? And while we were broadcasting last night's show, I said to Mr. Adachi, are you game for some live on the fly research while we're witnessing so-called breaking news? And he said, sure. And I gave accounts of where this individual is from, where he's living, awards that he's won, his associations with the media. Do you think it was an accident that they had this guy there? You see, they had to have somebody they could put in front of us and steer this psyops in the direction that they wanted it to go. But the intuition, you see, I've been talking to God the last few days, and this has everything to do with my experience with my father, with God, with my listening audience, with you folks who have supported me and my family and kept that door open, you see, kept my faith up and my discernment. It's and like I said, when we did our 9/11 stories this past week or two, I said, please, and we were outing spies on the show Wednesday night, okay? We were revealing the aliases of these people who were masquerading as patriots on the Patriot Network, and I said, don't insult my logic, or you can insult my logic, you can insult my discernment, you can insult my intelligence, but...
Well, it's a blatant insult to my intelligence that AOL gets to tell me what happened in the crash, while NTSB is saying, wait a minute, we don't know yet. You know, and I'm tired of it, and I hope all of America is tired of it, and all of Europe is tired of it, and all of everybody's tired of it.
Oh, this plane was a special plane, too. It had two black boxes that they recovered.
Oh, yeah. Two. One from Mossad and one for the CIA.
Yeah. That's a stab, I know, but you're probably right. I'll acknowledge that. Either Miss Judy or Mr. Jim, any comments, what you see going on here?
Well, Anderson wrote out exactly what happened.
Oh, let's hear that. Thank you, Anderson.
It's upstairs, unfortunately. So I don't have it. But he said, in a nutshell, that this was murder.
Oh, yes, there's no doubt about that. There is absolutely no doubt about it.
Do you know, what would the mathematical odds be, Mr. Murray, if the only woman with a legitimate, non-infiltrated lawsuit, and with a lawsuit with the stated objective of bringing the criminals, the people, to justice, and to determine who placed the preset bombs in the World Trade Center, one of the few family members that is absolutely certain of a conspiracy, and that this woman is the lead organizer of the relatives of the deceased, not from the planes, but from the World Trade Center, that she then meets with the the presidency in February the 6th, and that there's been no major plane crash in this country for 2 years, that this would happen.
I got an email. Pardon me. I just got an email from a listener, okay? And this is Mr. Bryant in New Jersey. He sent an email that this is breaking news. The crash plane was a 76-seat G-400 Bombardier's aircraft. When, since when does Continental fly those?
It's apparently an associate group that organizes that. I don't remember the name, Connolly Air or something. Go ahead, yeah. I mean, go ahead though.
Well, you know, it's a video. I'm not going to play it right now, especially during
it's
the
a
show.
Video. Okay.
Yeah, but that's the headline on the still picture before you click the play button. This was via MSNBC.
Well, it is. It's probably just a contracted thing with Continental. You're right. There, it says that the local officials say that it's Connolly Air. I don't remember the exact. It's the real player there. It's true. It's
okay.
It's a prop plane, but a good quality one. You know, fairly good Bombardier. Yeah.
Well, it only had 1,500 air miles on it.
Unprecedented. Jim, what do you see in this when you have those... is it possible for this to be an accident statistically?
Well, I don't know how to answer that statistically without more information, but one thing I can tell you, based on what just elucidated for me. I didn't know that it was a prop plane. But I can tell you, now that I do know that, that, you know, the glide ratio for a prop plane that's in trouble is actually a lot more pronounced than it is for a jet.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, that even raises my eyebrows more, because an experienced pilot in a prop plane can lose power completely and have a very good possibility of bringing that plane down in one piece. Look to the accident that happened in the Hudson River here last month, and you see how fast somebody has to act when there's a loss of power. And even in that case, it wasn't immediate. They knew that they had hit something, and they knew that their engines were going to go out, and he was already taking decisive action to prevent a calamity. But the minute that those engines went out, he had to get down in that river very quickly, because without power, a jet just can't do anything.
Yeah.
And so here we have a prop plane, and he was communicating with the tower, and everything was A-OK, and the next minute, you know, he's standing on his nose burning.
Yeah.
It leaves a lot to be answered.
It just the fact that it suddenly disappeared from radar would go along with an explosive device, would it not?
Well, that was my first thought. Yeah. That was my first thought, because, you know, radar, especially if they're near an airport, you know, radar has a pretty pretty extensive range to it. It can go almost all the way to the ground, and it can go up to a considerable height. And so, unless something really extraordinary happened, they should see it. I mean, how does it just go off radar?
Yeah, I had a vision of the plane when I was on this interview yesterday. And folks understand, and you've heard me say this before, I'm kind of a multidimensional human being, and I can do multitasking, and I can be involved in a conversation and have my mind be somewhere else or discerning something else. These visions came to me last night that plane sunk like a bowling ball or a lead brick. Mm-hmm. In fact, I had a vision of a black, dense brick, which was the evil, and not the plane itself, but just the perpetrator of this was represented as this mass of darkness. Compressed, and it was like a square brick, and actually that vision last night was transferred when I spoke to God and asked God to give me a vision of what occurred during the healing of my father, and that brick cracked. And if you could visualize a dividing line in the center, just a representation of what the center of that brick looked like, the brick is lying down flat. And about halfway or a quarter from the quarter point on the right upper right side of that line, down at a 45-degree angle to the quarter portion of the lower left side. In other words, this brick is sliced at an angle, sort of a jagged crack, and there was light shining through it. And God was saying, This miracle has permeated the darkness of the earth. And I saw that event with that same image that I saw last night. I saw this plane drop like a...
You know, it's interesting you talk about the darkness, if I may interject. When an individual from a very, I guess, prominent office started giving a certain eulogy, I guess our fearless leader or something. I turned my back. I said, I can't listen to this and I can't watch it. I put my back to this. And what, again, we don't discuss enough is that this woman was in the bowels of the devils just a few days ago. She was there. They know who she is. They fear her. And they killed her. How can you call it anything else?
Yeah, but the gods and the media have their answer prepared, don't they? They're told what
well,
to say.
Well, that's the proof. That's when I said, the heck with it, I'm going to tell the world, because when I saw that they were telling us what the investigation was, I said, okay, finished. You know, mm-hmm. only one reason they'd do this.
Yes. And,
well,
and you know,
Anderson says it's a warning. You know, it's a warning perpetrated specifically for those who are standing up for goodness and righteousness, and you know, those who are speaking out against the 911, you know, fraud.
Well, but we know that those are their methods, and so they're warning us that they're fearful. Is that what they're warning us?
Well, obviously.
Or it could be like, you know, we can just bang anybody. That kind of an attitude, you know, just doesn't matter.
Oh, I get the message, but they're really demonstrating that they are the ones that are controlled and that they are the ones filled with fear.
Well, the blood that was spilled will be avenged, and this blood is like energy. It's power. And those of the people who know this woman are talking about how dear of a person she was. She is now a heroess worth a million times more power than she ever had in relative, lividity or anonymity or whatever you want to call it. But she's a real power now.
Well, you know, nobody knew her. And so many people said to me, well, if this all is a big fraud and all that kind of stuff, then why don't some of the people who were there speak out? Well, you know, that's all been pretty much covered up. But what they've done is they've just highlighted who she is and what she's been doing. And now I think that this will actually, it will start opening minds. But that's in the
Well, let's hope
mind.
So.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, let's hope so for sure.
Yes. Well, again, I would like to point us back in this direction. You hear this very unorthodox explanation of what we discern happen, and we're all in agreement here. There's no disagreement.
No.
Is that because we're trying not to argue or disagree, or is it because we see the truth that we've learned to
Because discern. We're not going to let anybody insult, as you said, and I'm quoting your words, our intelligence. Our intelligence is naturally there, but most people won't confidence to it. You know, they know something's wrong. That this is, and immediately what's going to happen is instinctively they're going to think, why would this, her plane crash? You know, then they start rationalizing to themselves why they're not correct. They don't have the confidence to take it to the next step. But I think anybody listening to this program, for example, is going to say, you know what, that doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense that AOL and CNN and Fox News would start telling us what the investigative report is. It doesn't make sense that they would tell us the opposite of what the control tower says. If anybody should know anything, it's the control tower talking to the plane.
Well, the FAA, it takes months and sometimes years for them to determine exactly what caused the plane crash or whatever.
Yeah, do you think we actually heard the true audio? This is the other thing that we must remember, is that they broadcast something. And we mentioned the anomaly at the beginning of this discussion about the blue sky, right? There's a problem with the video, and they make mistakes. They are so confident in what they're doing that they make mistakes. Let's remember that somebody's got a recording of that somewhere in the world.
That's
okay?
True.
On a TiVo, on a VCR, and whatever other means. Now that remembered. Is it a fluke that happened, or is it they're stupid? We don't have the time to get this out. That message that we heard, anybody can go. Flight 3407.
Yes. Well,
flight 3407.
That's right. They did that. That's true. They did that to fake some of the Flight 11, 175 kind of things, or actually 93. But you're absolutely correct about this, that if evidence that turns up 3 months later, 6 months later, 2 weeks later, or a plane part that, oh, we found this 4 days later, that doesn't mean anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
But where people get confused is something like this, okay? They look at ABC News, and they might be a little suspicious why this little lady is gone, but they see this, and I'm quoting, plane crew discussed, quote, not quote, but with just an asterisk, significant ice buildup. They would never think that that's just a brazen lie by the PSYOP people. They would never think anybody would be bold. Yeah. But in fact, when you listen to the actual on YouTube, and I've mailed it to you, Dr. Don, when you listen to the YouTube interaction with the control tower and the pilot, they don't talk about anything like that. When
mm-hmm.
you talk to the local county officials, they say there was no issue from the pilots. And the opposite is in print. Just like the Bible, if it's in print, it's got to be true, right?
Mm-hmm. Now, yeah. There's a posting on Mr. Ken Adachi's website that just came to my attention, educate-yourself.org. This is likely in his latest articles section, I'm presuming. This is page 284 of a book called Secret and Suppressed, and it's the chapter called Exposing the Nazi International. Listen to this. Whether it be the DC-10 out of Paris with the problem regarding the cargo door, whether it was the Air New Zealand DC-10, whether it was the Western Airlines DC-10 that crashed on landing in Mexico City, whether it was the DC-10 that crashed at O'Hare Field in Chicago, the one constant that was used in all cases was ultrasonics, leaving no trace. It would be attributed to structural failure of one type or another. Mr. Jim Murray, any comment on that?
Well, yes, I know for a fact that as many as 25-30 years ago, the French were developing an ultrasonic laser, which was based on some original investigations that were done by simply building a scaled-up version of an ordinary sports whistle. And the thing was so damaging and so incredible in its power that what started off as a curiosity rapidly became a well-funded developmental project for a weapon. And strangely enough, even though the initial efforts were well-reported, you never heard another word out of that thing, and God only knows what it was developed into and by whom. But if you have enough ultrasonic power, even if you don't affect the plane, and I'm not saying that it didn't, but even if you don't affect the plane, you will definitely destroy the occupants, and planes don't stay up too well without somebody guiding them. So there's any number of things that could be done along those lines if that, in fact, was the methodology. The other thing that you want to remember, too, is, as Miss Judy pointed out, here we got a plane that's not even finished burning yet, and some idiot is already telling you why it went down. I agree with her, absolutely. It takes months of careful investigation and tens of thousands of hours of careful consideration to figure out how these tragedies occur. And yet, here we already have somebody broadcasting the final synopsis of what the cause of the accident was supposed to have been.
I was just going to add something, and please don't lose train of your thought, but I have to interject this before I forget it. Don't forget the name of the city where this occurred is Buffalo, okay? Buffalo has multiple meanings in the English language. Especially when you're talking about cow chips or buffalo chips, okay?
Or being buffaloed.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean, okay? I'm letting the listening audience use their imagination here.
Yeah.
The other, in reference to that, okay, there is an aspect to this readiness that they didn't even put together a commission to deliver this story. They didn't even retrieve the black boxes, and this information is coming out, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
It can only be propaganda.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
There's no other conclusion. It's pure propaganda.
AOL cannot tell us why this plane crashed while it's crashing. They cannot. They have no ability, to tell us who the passenger list is. So therefore, it was a predetermined hit, and they're in on it.
Yes. Now,
yeah,
Jim,
I think that's a very intriguing point too, because if by some miracle they knew the woman's name, and there were other passengers, then why didn't they know the rest of them? Aren't they all equally important? It's very strange that was the only name that ever came out.
Well, maybe they found her passport on the sidewalk a couple of blocks away from the house.
Well, even then, they're not allowed to announce these things without first the next of kin being properly informed.
Well,
yes.
You know, that's what they said, but they mentioned her, and they mentioned that Canadian guy.
Well, at first it was her, and then one or two others kind of crept up, and
no,
even then...
just the Canadian fellow, that was it, just the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that they've even yet mentioned anybody else.
Yeah, that's right.
The next paragraph of that document that Ken Adachi has posted on his educate-yourself.org website says, on board the DC-10 out of Chicago, it was learned at the airport that two couriers, members of the organization, this is capitalized, right, were to be on that flight and were to meet with a member of MI5. British intelligence in Los Angeles by the name of T, whose front is a representative of a London newspaper. When they were noticed, immediate action was taken to develop the structural crack to such an extent that a certain sound and vibration levels consistent with takeoff of the aircraft vibrations necessary to complete structural failure of the aircraft would take place. The two men on the aircraft, part of the, again, capitalized organization, 1K of Austria and S, who were subsequently killed in the crash. So here
I'd
we
have
ultrasonic equipment.
I'd want to have more information on that, because I think that article is, what, attributing a number of crashes to that, or just this one?
Oh, a number of them.
I'd want to have, see, the thing that, that is glaring about this is the fact that the PSYOP or Secret Service related media has already revealed its cards. So you have real strong motive to investigate this and to publish this and to spread the message. All of these things, of course, can be, but this one is glaring.
This is a second plane crash in New York. Between the Hudson River in the immediate vicinity of New York and Manhattan and Buffalo within the space of a week or so.
Absolutely.
2 weeks.
What are the odds of that?
That's exactly right. No one's properly investigated the other one. But
it would be very interesting to find out who was on that, what the occupation of each of the individuals on the other plane. That's something that hasn't been addressed.
Well, it hasn't been because you've got the loosened bolts issue versus the what one emailer sent to me, which I'll check in further, versus the geese that didn't exist.
Well, they came up with the bird story very quickly. I mean, again, the spin is getting faster and faster.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, we do know a couple of the people worked for an airlines, right? We had a couple of pilots and some stewardesses, but...
Well, what about the passengers, though? Who were they?
Well, of course, I'm being a bit facetious.
That has never been checked, you know. And, of course, but again, we have a history. We have a history of Senator Wellstone, very interesting man, very powerful man, that would have gotten in the way of the war effort. We have John F. Kennedy, Jr., we have all these coincidences of very prominent Americans, top of the game of fighting government corruption, being killed in these airliners. Every one of them a murder until proven otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Now, while we're on the subject of all this collusion, it might be interesting to note that this morning I received an email from a source that I value very highly, which highlighted several of the new administration's most immediate tasks. And I think it was the second or third one on the list is the elimination of talk shows. So what does that tell you?
Well, let me tell you something. Obama has said, I've already been on record saying, you know, that God tells us to watch out for the fake and the mark of the whatever. And what that is an individual that people swoon over or have some kind of false hope in, right? And this individual's on record at least 150 times, whatever, saying that 911's going to be history. We're going to move, he calls it moving on. So, right on the money, Mr. Murray.
Yeah, I raise this question that I raise every time I talk about this subject. Why is it all of a sudden permissible to excuse or to disallow a murder investigation, especially when it's mass murder?
Yeah.
Does that not show who the perpetrators are?
Absolutely it does. And the perpetrator is Rockefeller. Rockefeller, according to Eric Hufschmidt, should not be looked at. One should look at Eric Hufschmidt then, because Rockefeller owns Shanksville's mining strip. Let's be real kind of clear about it. So therefore, when this pit exploded, who owned the pit? He did. So count number one. Who owned the North Tower? He does, through his, fabricated Port Authority. Count number two. Who owns the South Tower? He does. Count number three. Who owns the military-industrial complex? He does. Count number four. Now, he has associates, I understand. But the CFR is his beast. And who's the co-founder of the CFR? Zbigniew Brzezinski. Count number five. And who is Rockefeller's illicit son, one of the Rockefellers? Mr. Nikoloff? Who's the most likely one, the chosen one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we hit it on the head. So this is just day one of the investigation, and look at all the information that comes out, you see?
Well, one thing I thought was very curious was that, everyone contributed to the 911 fund for people who had people killed in the buildings and stuff. I mean, this came from the American public. But isn't it interesting that the government doled it out and they would only give it to people who would sign a contract stating that they would never sue any company or the U.S. government for 9/11? Now, why would you make people sign a document like that if you didn't, if you were concerned, I mean, if you didn't have anything to be guilty about?
Was there any stipulation about Barack, not Barack, see, these names become very confusing, especially with their Irish tone.
Yeah.
Osama bin Laden, and I don't mean that as an insult.
No, you can sue him all you want, you can sue the Saudis. By the way, there were only two so-called lawsuits. I'm warning you people, if you listen carefully as to who you should support or who you think you're involved with, there were only two supposed legitimate lawsuits. We never heard anything about Beverly Eckert, except I heard a little bit about her, but generally we didn't hear much about her. But the other lawsuit everybody knows about, she's been at all the 911 meetings, Ellen Mariani.
Oh, yes. And we have some very revealing information on that issue, don't we?
And who exactly? And remember, she said recently, "I'm the only one who has a lawsuit of any of the passengers. I'm the only surviving relative of any passengers on the plane." She says she's the only surviving relative.
Well, I recall Stanley Hilton, who was an attorney that went to the University of Chicago. And I think he went to school with Donald Rumsfeld and some other savory characters.
Oh, so I see the connection. I wonder why she hasn't been assassinated. Her attorney is one Philip Berg.
Yeah, yeah.
The same guy that's supposedly suing for justice against Obama. People, I tell you.
Yeah, it's a desperate attempt to exonerate themselves from any responsibility for what occurred on that day. Why, if Bin Laden do it, why would anyone sue the American government for their negligence while they had their military?
They're all suing the government, except some confused souls. But yeah, they're all suing the government. And I tell you, the fact that Mariani is out there, but there were no airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
So where's her husband?
Yes. Well, right? We know where her husband is, don't we?
Yeah. He's cooking up a storm somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not on the other side. It's right here on the earth somewhere.
Yeah.
We know that Olana Abraham's alive. She was listed, on Flight 11.
Mm-hmm.
We know that you found that Daniel Lewin's alive.
Yes. And some other people found that Barbara Olson is alive.
Let's ask everybody that's still concerned about airplanes, how could there be any airplanes if we found some of the passengers are still alive?
Mm-hmm. And how can we consider that those missing passengers and the obviously missing airplanes were flown by hijackers with box cutters who are still alive, which you have
presented.
Yeah,
and what is really, really interesting is that when we mentioned that to quite a few people that those supposed hijackers were still alive, they said, well, they ought to round them up and kill them. I mean, is this logic? But this is American thinking.
Yeah.
Oh, well. You know, that's Mr. Rogers and the Simpsons and Disney at
mm-hmm.
work there. I mean, and a little bit of American Idol and some Hollywood movies. You have people that are just totally dysfunctional in their thinking. We discussed denial, didn't we, earlier on?
You know, yes, we did. We absolutely did, Don. This Beverly Eckert, she was much like Diana. Where Diana, we didn't know anything about Diana. We didn't know that she was going to knock the landmine people in the nose until they killed her. Then we heard about her.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we can't let that happen with Mrs. Eckert. We have to be all Mrs. Eckert's. We have to sacrifice like she did, sleeping in the train station at the Washington, D.C., living on bread and water, sacrificing her all. All of us have to adopt her spirit. They're going to make fun of her, maybe. We pay no attention to that. They're going to, make her out like she, just was an innocent victim in a plane crash. We're not going to pay attention to that. We're going to make this thing, we're going to make her lawsuit, her project, our project.
Her mission, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, mission.
Mr. Murray, we're and all our guests, Dr. K and Miss Judy, we're running out of time here. I want to give each of you an opportunity here in our last 3 minutes or so to conclude this show. What has come out in your viewpoint, in your perception, or your discernment? What message? And we've been all over the place. We've talked about my father and our gratitude for prayer, and I have no words to express that beyond what I've already said. They don't exist in the English language. But again, we're hit with more false flag events, more disasters, cover-ups, all these things. And we talked about faith and love and coming together. What do you see here?
Well, the most obvious thing to me, and of course, it's unfortunate because I don't know how other people think or how they process information, but to me there are so many glaring problems that are deliberately not addressed. that you're forced to ask the question, well, why not? And it makes you wonder just how many more calamities, how many more plane crashes, how many more explosions, how many more whatever have to occur before people are going to start realizing that there's a pattern to all of this and it doesn't just happen by itself. You know, it doesn't do any good to pull the wool over your own eyes and hope for the best. You know, that's the old ostrich syndrome.
Yeah.
Just remember that when your head is in the sand, your behind is in the air. And
Doc, I'm going to defer to you and Miss Judy to close.
You want me to close?
Yes,
huh?
You guys. I want to hear from you.
Okay, Miss Judy, go ahead. Would you please?
Okay. Well, what we have to do is look to the light and keep our eyes on the light, because that is our only salvation. I was so intense. My heart was so, it was so strongly hoping that everyone in the United States would suddenly, you know, become aware and stand up and say, no, we're not going to allow these things anymore. And then I saw, that's not going to happen. So what I did was I just let go. And I, you know, again, it's the law of attraction. And whatever we attract, we attract. But there will be a separation. And I mentioned this before. There will be a separation. And those who are alike, whose thoughts are alike, you know, we'll be all brought together. And we will lift into that light. And if people choose to straddle the fence, or if they choose the darkness, then, you know, then that's what they're going to get. And this is a fact. I mean, and it's going to happen. It absolutely is happening every single day. We're closer and closer to it. And it's, as he said before, it's not a billion years. It's now.
I just want to add, in due course, one of the your emailers, Mr. Bryant, has a fantastic idea on how to rally the forces. So in due course, we're hearing some proper plans for the mission statement. Maybe we can have a discussion about this. Maybe people who want to know what that plan is and who've never emailed can shoot us an email. Would it be best to shoot to you, Don, to keep it on file, or to me, or what's the best way?
To me or to you.
Well, how about to you then? That we can, at least those of you who've never emailed, so we can have your email. Now, if you're espionage, you know, you might want to tell us, because we're going to figure it out anyway. So,
yeah, it's gotten to where we don't even have to use Google anymore.
No.
Okay.
So let us know who you are if this is your stuff. That's all.
And you're welcome to join the light.
Yes. Everyone is welcome. And even Jesus said, love your enemies. And we can see the reason for that.
Yeah.
Because they when you love anyone or anything, and I'm not speaking about money, or I'm not speaking about perversions. I'm speaking about meaningful things, things that God created. Then you are putting light on that, and the darkness just evaporates, like a plane hitting the World Trade Center.
Yeah.
It evaporates, just like that. In fact, it's real. So, in closing, I want to thank all three of you. Jim Murray, I somehow feel I should be calling you Dr. Jim, and Dr. Qasim Khalil, Dr. K. Your faith and your wisdom in medicine and in research and discerning all these things, and your acknowledgement of my work, and I really truly mean that. You're absolutely brilliant yourself in research, and going the extra mile And I heard someone on another show, on the Rick Adams show, refer to your work. In fact, it was Mr. Scott Smith who said you are a searcher.
Yeah.
And I like that. I've sometimes referred to myself as a truth seeker, and I guess I'm a seeker. You're a searcher, I'm a seeker. And Miss Judy, your discernment and the wonderful message that you bring from heaven itself, always, without fail, the wisdom comes through your words, just like the signs that I got when I prayed and when so many, maybe millions of people around the world prayed for my father and my family. I thank all of you for being on the show. I thank those of you who have sent us emails, Mr. Bryant, Mr. Ken Adachi as well, and the many other emails that we get where people are helping us with this work. We have to come together. We have to recognize our oneness. And I say we have to. We really don't have to do anything. I think it's the natural thing to do. I think God created us with that purpose ingrained in our souls.
I would like to thank Mr. Murray for giving us part of his co-host time, too.
Oh,
yes.
That's not a problem at all, Doctor, believe me. I'm
okay.
Very happy to share with you and Miss Judy as well.
Yes,
Mr. Don, God bless you and everybody listening.
Well,
love is the answer.
Love is the answer. And I thank you all for a wonderful show. I encourage you, if you've heard the show and anything revealed a truth to you, that you share this with your family and your friends and even your enemies, because it will put more life on the earth, a light on the earth. I'm living that experience, and I thank you for your prayers. And I must also thank Don Newsom, Doug Newsom, Seth Hendrick, all the people at BBS Radio that have been unnamed all night long for making this show possible, for your prayers, your love, your friendship. I thank you from the bottom of my heart. And Seth, the sound was great tonight. You're becoming a master. Or Don, whoever's there. And okay, Don, we love you. And the listening audience, thank you so much. You all have a wonderful weekend. Share this message with everybody. Share this message. And we'll see you next week. Believe it or not, our guest Monday and Tuesday night is none other than Dr. K. So in the meantime, have a wonderful weekend. Have a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.